under the Wartime Elections Act of 1917, naturalized British subjects from enemy countries who had come to Canada since 1902 were not allowed to vote. Suddenly, they were non-citizens. In return, they were not subjected to conscription either. Reverend Ernest Stapleford, president of Regina College, supported the Borden government, as did President Walter Murray of the University of Saskatchewan. Murray broke his self-imposed rule about not getting involved in party politics. He offered his resignation to the Board of Governors of the university, but they did not accept it. After the armistice, wartime passions subsided, but not completely. The Regina War Memorial in Victoria Park was unveiled on 11th November 1926. The honor of laying the first wreath went to Mrs. A. Hilsendegger, whose son Joseph was killed in the war. The Hilsendeggers attended St. Mary's Roman Catholic Church, which had a large German congregation, and even conducted some of its services in German. Joseph's last letter was dated the 21st of April, 1915. "We go into the trenches tomorrow night," he wrote. "After we come out, we go to a town for a rest. Ypres is the name. They are shelling Ypres pretty hard, and quite a number of people are killed. Please write me some letters, as it is a month now since I have received any from home, and it is very lonesome out here." At the same ceremony, the Reverend Will Sermon, an ex-serviceman, gave the dedicatory prayer. He was a Baptist minister at Cameron Street Church and soon to be exalted Cyclops or president of the Ku Klux Klan in Regina. The next year at the Armistice Day service, he laid a wreath on behalf of the Klan. The Klan having arrived in Saskatchewan at the end of 1926, thanks to three organizers from South Bend, Indiana, the Scots, Lewis and Harold, and Hugh Finley Emmons, who in Canada went by the name Pat Emery. The Scots recruited members in Regina, while Emmons did the same in Moose Jaw. They worked on commission, receiving a portion of the $13 fee paid out for each membership. It is estimated they sold 25,000 memberships, though that is little more than a guess. In September 1927, they left the province, taking the money with them. Local Klansmen then revamped the organization at a provincial convention in Moose Jaw. They severed all ties with the Klan in the United States and abandoned the practice of wearing robes and hoods. They pledged to use only non-violent and constitutional methods to achieve their goals. Their basic goal was to keep Canada British, by which they meant building and preserving a white Protestant nation of British racial stock. The Klan was part of the larger debate about national identity. The war was a rite of passage, a cataclysmic event that helped transform Canada from colony to nation. At the same time, Canada was still, in a sense, British. When the Prince of Wales visited the University of Saskatchewan in 1919, the Chancellor and President welcomed him with the words, "And we gladly avail ourselves of this auspicious occasion to renew to His Majesty and to yourself our assurances of affection, which the untiring services rendered by you both in the late period of peril have done so much to deepen and enlarge. Canadian nationalism in the 1920s was a complex emotion. Many Canadians felt both Canadian and British, and they did not feel they had to choose one to the exclusion of the other. The Klan campaign to keep Canada British resonated with the wider society. The Dominions fought for the empire as if it were their own, and they were not about to abruptly sever that connection. Jay Cox, the secretary of the Regina local of the Ku Klux Klan, wrote a letter to the leader in 1928 affirming that the Union Jack was Canada's proper flag and must always remain so. It was the flag of the United Empire Loyalists and the symbol of Canada's true self. The Klan deprecated the singing of O Canada rather than God Save the King, a practice that was becoming more common. To the Klan, O Canada was merely a patriotic song composed for a religious festival in Quebec, not the national anthem. If there was need for a patriotic song, the Maple Leaf Forever was much better, though not a suitable substitute for the anthem. Cox summed up the Klan as an order of red-blooded Canadians and loyal Britishers who view with alarm conditions in our Dominion and are endeavoring by constitutional methods to assist in every way possible to bring about a better and brighter outlook for Canada, but we feel that we will never accomplish that purpose by withdrawing ourselves in every way possible from the mother country to whom we owe so much. 5,000 Saskatchewan men were killed in the Great War, the great majority of British origin. After the war, their families struggled to come to terms with the loss. Part of the process of grieving was to find something meaningful or purposeful in what had happened. This was accomplished after the First World War by the dedication of memorials, which functioned as substitute grave sites, and the performance of Remembrance Day rituals, which served as substitute funerals. The language of commemoration drew on the pre-war rhetoric of God, Empire, King, and Country, on notions of sacrifice, presenting the war in terms of a crusade for human dignity and liberty. The war had been fought to preserve British ideals and to keep Canada British. But in the mid to late 1920s, foreigners started to come into Saskatchewan again, as they had done before the war. The 1931 census revealed what many people had suspected. For the first time, people of non-British origin formed the majority of the population. To some, it looked as though what had been won in the trenches of France and Belgium was now being lost on the plains of Saskatchewan. The exalted Cyclops in Moose Jaw was Frederick Ive, the same man who had led the National British Citizenship League during the First World War. Their slogan had been "One flag, one school, one tongue." The Klan, too, took up the campaign to keep the schools British, focusing in particular on the elimination of Roman Catholic symbols from the public school classrooms. The Klan also revived the moral crusade against alcohol and other social vices, which had been a central part of wartime patriotic fervor. This was why the Klan enjoyed so much support from Protestant clergymen so much so that the United Church refused to condemn the organization. There was a motion in 1928 before the United Church Conference to condemn the plan, and the motion was tabled. They refused to vote on it. Reverend Will Sermon addressed a Klan rally at Regina City Hall in this is the same rally that Tom was reading from, February 1928, and he picked out the same quote. "I am a minister of the gospel, and as a minister of the gospel, I see nothing contradictory in the principles which I teach and the principles of the Klan to which I belong." He said he knew something of sniper's bullets. He had faced them in the Great War, and therefore he was not afraid of anything the Klan's opponents might throw at him. He confessed that in the Klan he had found something that met his need. It helped him make sense of the war. It justified the terrible sacrifices that had been made and assured him that those who had not died in vain. Thus, the non-British were targeted in the 1920s just as they had been targeted during the war. Only with the Great Depression did political discourse shift. Immigration was brought to a halt, and national identity issues gave way before the economic crisis. Saskatchewan eventually redefined itself as a multicultural province, officially taking for its motto not one flag, one school, one tongue, but rather from many people's strength. The prejudices aroused by the First World War and its aftermath did a great deal of damage and hurt the victims. The non-British were loyal Canadians and did not deserve the treatment they received. That being said, Saskatchewan eventually moved on and embraced ethnic diversity. The situation in Central and Eastern Europe was much worse. In Bloodlands, Europe between Hitler and Stalin, published in 2010, Yale University historian Timothy Snyder describes the mass killing of 14 million non-combatants in the years between 1933 and 1945 in a region that includes modern-day Poland, Ukraine, Belarus, Russia, and the Baltic states. Much of this killing was driven by ethnic hatred. By that standard, British Saskatchewan, even at its lowest point during the First World War and the 1920s, was a relatively safe haven in a dangerous world. Thank you.